in the next 60 minutes here on Newsnight. Former MIF board member takes on current management of the Mineral Income Investment Fund over its refusal to provide full disclosure on raft of documents, including financial statements on its operations in 2024.
Altogether,
we have the latest, including how MIF lost over 700 million cedis in gold trade deal with Gold Ridge Refinery Limited. Also tonight, standoff between lawyer Martin Kpebu and Office of the Special Prosecutor. As it emerges, Mr. Kpebu refused to answer questions when he appeared before the office over his allegations that the Special Prosecutor is corrupt. We have details as Mr. Kpebu declares he will only speak to the OSP's board.
But the only problem right now is that they are choosing to use subordinates, people who cannot investigate Kisi Ejiagbin. How can you tell the underling to investigate his boss? That's why, Mr. JCU, can you investigate Mr. Kwesi Chum?
Also tonight, Bank of Ghana signals an era of cheaper borrowing with massive 350 basis point cut to its policy rate, bringing it down to 18%, the biggest reduction since Ghana's debt default.
The committee, by majority decision, voted to lower the monetary policy rate further by 350 basis points to 18.0%.
We'll tell you what that means for your pocket. Also tonight, the impact of illegal mining has opened the door to ruthless exploitation in the central region, where a gallon of borehole water now goes as high as 5 Ghana cedis.
Yeah, okay, you're giving back 5 cedis. But your customer now open us, they will to me and me 10 cedis. Let's just say, what consider no?
When it's a boy, you're going to say,
more in our continuing series, Dear Mahama, hashtag Stop Galamsey.
In business, we'll be telling you what influenced the Bank of Ghana's decision to cut the policy rate to 18%.
In sports,
Asante Kotoko suffer shock defeat away at Basake Holy Stars in the Ghana Premier League.
Plus, your views and comments all here on Newsnight 0551. And you're live here on Newsnight. It's on Joy 99.7 FM. Now, the former board member of the Mineral Income Investment Fund, Koi Suman, is fighting back, demanding the current management provide full disclosure on the raft of reports, including its 2024 financial and audited accounts. Now, according to him, MIF management has refused his right to information request, citing breach of transparency obligations under the Minerals Income Investment Fund Act. Now, his request come on the back of a Joy News series on the MIF 2024 audit report, detailing how the board and senior management of the fund spent over 11 million cedis on foreign travels in 2024 without government approval. He argues that his travels as former board member was approved. Head of research, Joy News, Isaac Kofi Ejay, joins me in the studio with more on this. We have cited a letter approving Kosuman's travel. Give us more.
Well, so in the general and administrative responses or expenses, MIF spent a total of nearly 13 million CDs on foreign travels. And according to what we are learning so far, transport cost alone was over 9.2 million Ghana cedis. That's about 70.8%, while hotel and restaurant over 3.6 million cedis. It's also important to note that out of the figure that the Auditor General actually flagged, 11 million cedis was actually spent without approval on foreign travels.
Now, this is important to disaggregate. So the board spent a total of 13 million cedis.
Absolutely.
On foreign travels.
Absolutely.
In a year.
In a year.
However, 11 million of that amount was done without prior authorization.
Without prior approval.
And that was the period when the government had said very clearly, you cannot travel without getting such approval.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then so today, as we've seen some of the board members come forward with additional information to say, well, we may be part of the just over 2 million or so, or just over a million CDs that was spent on traveling with approval. And we've seen Koi Suman's letter.
Well, so in that letter, that RTR request that Koi Suman is actually demanding, is requesting for four important details. The first one is the chronology of facts. The second is the statutory provisions involved in this whole deal or this whole, circumstance, and the legal argument, as well as the reliefs being sought. He also, in that letter, is compelling me to disclose the requested information and also impose an administrative penalty under the section 71 of the Act 989 for the RTI law, from the RTI, for the willful non-compliance to that request that he placed to MIT. And in fact, he also attaches, four or five important documents which he believes that is important as far as this RTI request is concerned. Copies of the RTI request he himself sent to MIT, and a letter from MIT dated 15th October 2025, the applicant's response dated 20th October 2025, and internal review applications dated 30th of October 2025. So this is what he's requesting for under the RTI request that he has placed.
So fundamentally, this audit report that we have secured, the board members don't have a copy. They
Absolutely.
Don't have a copy. And he, from what you're indicating, had already written to MIPS under RTI saying, give me a copy. And he's been turned down. Yes. This is what he's currently challenging with the commission now, raising questions about breach of his right. Now, on the other subject of whether or not he's one of those who travel without authorization, again, he's produced a raft of documents, including one dated 25th of September 2024, where it comes with the heading Minexpo International 2024, in which the then chief of staff writes to him, says, approval is hereby given for you as a board member of the Minerals Income Investment Fund to travel to Las Vegas, Nevada, or USA to attend the Minesco International 2024 forum from 24th to 26th September, as requested in your letter dated 20th September 2024.
And this that was indicating signed, right?
So signed yes,
by
to him.
Frema Osei
yes,
Opari.
To him, addressed to him as a legal counsel to the president, office of the president, Jubilee House. Just clarifying that point on this particular subject. So some of the board members already taking on MIF for denying them access to this particular report. We have a copy, and it details some very interesting revelations, including, as we are now learning, this confidential audit by the Ghana Audit Service revealing how the failure of the Minerals Income Investment Fund's management to monitor its gold trade deal with Gold Ridge Refinery Limited cost the state and the chamber of bulk oil distributors to lose over 700 million cedis. The Office of the Special Prosecutor last month detained the CEO of Gold Ridge, Nana Yaudu, do you know him popularly as Dr. Sledge, after he failed to meet bail conditions. He's under investigations for suspected corruption and corruption-related offences linked to MIF, particularly in the management of its gold trade program. Now, Joy News' Quentin Nati has been following the investigations and has more in the following report.
According to an audit of the Minerals Income Investment Fund's annual report and financial statements for 2024 by the Ghana Audit Service, the state and the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors incurred gold trade losses amounting to 708,696,569 Ghana cedis. These losses were settled by MIIF on behalf of the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors and Fidelity Bank. The confidential audit report in the possession of Joynees revealed that MIIF entered into a five-year gold trade agreement worth $30 million with Gold Ridge Refinery Limited, GRL. Under the deal, MIIF was expected to earn 15% annual interest. The report further noted that MIIF entered into a parallel agreement with the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors, CBOD. Under this agreement, MIIF was to advance cedis to Gold Ridge to purchase gold, while Gold Ridge was to provide the chamber with US dollars to buy petroleum products for the Guinean market. However, after receiving the cedis, Gold Ridge failed to deliver the promised dollars. Gold Ridge attributed the shortfall to foreign exchange losses, but the audit found that the problem resulted from MIIF management's failure to monitor and enforce the contract. The report stated, and I quote, the management's failure to enforce Clause 8 of its agreement with Gold Ridge, which required the parties to jointly appoint an independent auditor within 14 days of the agreement's execution date to audit the transaction quarterly, and their inability to meticulously monitor, review, and analyze the trade process caused the irregularity. The silence of the Investment Advisory Committee regarding this significant investment decision further contributed to this anomaly, unquote. The former MIIF CEO Edward Cranton explained that the Bank of Ghana's insistence on using Bloomberg mid-rates for gold trading caused the foreign exchange losses. To plug the financial gap, Mr. Cranton secured Finance Ministry approval for $40 million, out of which $26.4 million went to the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors to cover part of its losses. The audit further noted that the circumstances surrounding Gold Ridge's losses to Fidelity Bank and the Chamber suggest that MIIF risks losing its $30 million investment and an accrued interest of $2.4 million. When joiners contacted Fidelity Bank, the institution confirmed that it had advanced funds to MIIF in cedis with the understanding that MIIF would settle the equivalent in foreign exchange within a stipulated period. The bank stated that although MIIF initially failed to meet the deadline, the outstanding amounts were fully settled by December last year. It recommended that MIIF conducted a stress test on the gold trade agreement with Goldridge to determine the current position of the fund's trade capital and accrued interest of $32,489,315.07, or discontinue the program entirely and recover its funds. However, auditors stated that they found no evidence of recovery or remediation efforts as claimed. The Ghana Audit Service has therefore directed MIIF to recover the entire $40.3 million from Goldridge. Should recovery fail, the report recommends that former MIIF board chair Professor Douglas Boatin, former Deputy Finance Minister Alex Ampabin, former MIIF CEO Edward Cranton, and MIIF Chief Investment Officer Bubune Sopo be held accountable. When joiners contacted the individuals cited in the report, they declined to comment, citing the ongoing investigation by the Office of the Special Prosecutor. For joiners, this is Kwiti Nate reporting.
Well, there is a new management in place following the elections, and they have declined comment on this particular report. But 3 weeks ago, speaking at the Public Accounts Committee on the 2023 Auditor General's report, Acting MIF CEO Justina Nelson said the fund has cancelled all gold trading agreements.
With the coming of the gold board, we needed to be in our mandate, which was given to us by our mother body. So we now have to look at the royalties coming in and ensure that those royalties are given to the state or collected with Mincom and GRA. So that is exactly what is being done. We decided that those aggregators will be ceded off to Gold Board because they are the mother body for them to be able to get the gold coming in and all. And so that has been done. We've written to the aggregators. Those contracts that we were given to them, where we had some negotiations with them to be able to transition them nicely to gold. But so we are still in the transition stage, but we stopped the gold trade altogether.
Patrick Stevenson is a country manager at the Natural Resource Governance Institute, joins us on Zoom right now. Patrick, thanks for your time here on Newsnight. Very controversial subject. A lot of investigations currently happening into the gold trading scandal at MIF. You've just heard there, as detailed by Justina Nelson, the acting CEO, last 3 weeks before PAC, that they have cancelled it. Is that a move that should be made permanent for now?
I mean, there are those that support, you know, that idea that, you know, perhaps that's, you know, the way to go. But I think this question about MIF, you know, and all the challenges that are coming up, I think fundamentally raises, you know, governance questions, right? And the extent to which, you know, controls that hitherto were put on the law were, you know, breached significantly, right? And so the excuse of whether or not, you know, we should wipe the institution off the books, I think for me, it's neither here nor there. It's the governance questions that are breached. If you look at the MIF law carefully, and like most of our public sector institutions, you know, and here, you know, everyone's, I draw your attention to, you know, section 38 of Act, you know, 9978. It does indicate that, you know, just like any of our public institutions operating in the extractive sector, there's a requirement for, you know, the preparation of annual reports. And for me, the buck stops, you know, with the finance minister, which was that you know, the report has to be submitted to the finance minister. He has, you know, by law, a mandate to submit that to parliament for proper scrutiny. Now, how has all of this happened and somehow, you know, we never got to the bottom of it? And so I think that if you think of that carefully, perhaps the school of thought that says, you know, we treated, you know, the managers of the fund treated it as some kind of a slush fund, I think tends to lay a bit of credence to the argument that perhaps maybe we should find better use of our resources. But I think...
And does the cancellation cure the problem?
So there's two ways to look at this, really, because I don't think we have outrightly cancelled, you know, the existence of the institution from the books, right?
What if cancelled is a gold trading part of the institution, which used to be the norm under the previous administration?
Well, so yes, but that doesn't solve the problem, right? Because again, the gold trading is just one of the programs. If you look at the other report carefully, I think there were significant issues that were equally discussed in terms of, you know, projects that BIF has invested in, even some of the, you know, assets and companies that they had invested in, and the extent to which, you know, they're getting proper return for value. I think for us in the extractive sector, the questions that we have been asking all through have been, you know, questions around investment guidelines and the extent to which, you know, MIF itself was selecting projects and were making investments in these projects, and whether that was happening from a transparent standpoint. And so suspending the program is one thing, but I think the fundamental questions, you know, around governance of MIF and the optimization and the utilization of our mining revenues, I think is a completely different thing. As we speak today, the amendment to the law we saw in March has almost, you know, withdrawn all the revenues that go to them into a designated fund that is under the control of the finance minister, purposely to be used for investment in infrastructure. They still retain some 2%, you know, ostensibly to support administrative activities. You equally see a case where they are still managing assets under the portfolio. So again, those questions around the quality of investments that they have made over the past, I think, don't go away. And perhaps leaves a lot more, you know, questions than answers on the table. And for us, I think those governance questions are particularly important rather than just, you know, the mere suspension of the program. Because that does nothing. From the recommendations we have seen in the report, simply cancelling the program is not enough.
Okay. Thank you, Stephen. Patrick Stevenson is the country manager at the Natural Resource Governance Institute. So live your news night is on Joy 99.7 FM. On this particular subject, the Office of the Special Prosecutor has been investigating it too and has detained one of the protagonists, as has been alleged. Kofi, what do we know?
So the OSP says that as part of ongoing investigations, the Office of the Special Prosecutor today conducted searches at the Trasaco residence.
Not today, as in today.
October 29, 2025. So last month, this was when the release came out, says today conducted searches at Trasaco residence of Nana Yao Dodu, also known as Dr. Sledge, at the East Legon office of Goldrich, you know, Company Limited. The searches were carried out under warrant issued by the High Court in Accra. Nana Yao Dodu is under investigation for suspected corruption and corruption-related offences linked to the Minerals Income Investment Fund, MIF, gold trade, program, which allegedly caused a loss of $94 million to the state. The OSP's, you know, asset recovery and management team seized several items, including luxury vehicles, jewellery, weapons, and document relating to landed properties. And this, again, was published on the 29th of October, 2020.
So that's the last update we have on that. Thank you very much, Kofi. I will stay with the OSP a while longer because the standoff between lawyer Martin Pibu and the Office of the Special Prosecutor has deepened. Tonight it has emerged that Mr. Pibu refused to answer questions when he appeared before the office over his allegations that the Special Prosecutor himself is corrupt. Kenneth JC is in the studio with me because we had an update from the OSP today on what indeed transpired before the office when Martin Pibu appeared. What did the OSP say?
Right, so the OSP made this through its director at the Communication Division, Sami Dakon. He wrote a lengthy post on Facebook. Parts of it, he said that Mr. Kpebu was contacted on Thursday, the 20th of November, along with one of his lawyers, inviting him to appear on Friday, the 21st of November. He answered the call on Thursday, stating he was at a program and will call back, but he did not. A follow-up message, according to Sammy Dacon, was sent directing him to appear on Friday. He again did not respond. Now, the OSP team called him multiple times on Friday regarding the scheduled appearance. During the Q&A session on X Spaces on Sunday at 7 p.m., he said that in response to a question about his absence at 2 p.m. on Friday, that he had been called 15 times between Thursday and Friday up to that point. So another invitation was given to him on Tuesday, which he honored. And according to Sammy Dacon, when he appeared before the team, questions focused on his specific allegations of corruption. He stated he would not answer, explaining he was still preparing his materials and preferred to present them to the OSP board. As the questioning continued, Sammy Dacon says he became agitated, insisting he would not respond, and the session was stopped. He was discharged and informed he will be invited again at a later date. So these are excerpts of the post that Sammy Dacon made on Facebook.
You spoke to Martin Kpebu on Pulse. What did he say to the information that's shared by the OSP, Sammy Dacon?
Martin Kpebu said essentially when he went to the OSP, he was interviewed by subordinates of the SP, the Special Prosecutor Kisi Ejabin, and he says that the subordinates were going to report to the SP, and that he find quite worrying, and the only person or the only group of people that he's willing to speak to is the OSP board.
Chose to say that, oh, I'll keep it confidential. We don't need to embarrass the special prosecutor. But he's chosen to come and embarrass himself. Alois Kaloni, I have just one simple statement to make. What breaks it down? The officers we met yesterday are subordinates to Kisi Ejabin. They are subordinates. Subordinates. We are all citizens. Why not? I'm not being investigated. I've made allegations of corruption. So they needed to see if they can get further details to go on. But the only problem right now is that they are choosing to use subordinates, people who cannot investigate Kisi Ejabin. How can you tell the underling to investigate his boss? That's why, Mr. JCU, can you investigate Mr. Kwesi Chum? Can you investigate Mr. Kenan Ansa in multimedia? Who born dog? You, can you do that? You can't. It's not possible. So it's these simple principles of law. Simple principles of law. They can't handle. Is it any wonder that they allowed Ofunata to run? Is it any wonder that they are filing charges on causing financial loss, money laundering, which don't belong to them? Because just about 2 years ago, Kisi Ejabin told us that money laundering is not part of the OSP functions, OSP mandate, because if you go to section 78, you see the offenses that the OSP can investigate and charge.
Right.
So he returned CC that passed money to him, etc. Now 2 years on, you say you are doing money laundering. When you don't have a court decision, you see, when you are doing governance, you carry the whole society along, whole of society approach or whole of government approach. So between the Sicily at part time and now, Mr. JC, when Sammy Dacon comes, ask him, did they go to court and the court gave interpretation that now they can do money laundering and causing financial loss? If that is so, what you do is that, Mr. JC, this is the point. The way Ghana our system works, if a case goes to court, not all the decisions get put out in public. So if there's a court decision that says now they can do so, what the special prosecutor should have done is that you hold a press conference and then you prep citizens that, oh, I've gone to court and I have a decision that says money laundering is mine, causing financial loss is also mine, though they are not in my act.
Right.
So you prep the citizens. You don't go and file charges straight, because the moment you do what they've done now, it means that you create suspicion that you just want to go to court, then the court will free the accused.
Right.
So please ask him, how did the narrative, how did their mandate change? Is it a court decision? If it's not a court decision, we don't want such a gamble. What they have to do is that they have to go to court independently without using any accused person as a guinea pig.
I want to bring in Justice Abdullahi, a private legal practitioner, joins us on Zoom right now. And Justice, it is Martin Kpebu's right not to answer any question when he appeared before the OSP investigators yesterday.
Indeed, that is correct. That nobody can compel you to respond to anything, particularly when the issues involve a possible prosecution of a person. So it's a fundamental right in criminal law that you are not allowed to self-incriminate, and you are allowed your right whether to respond or not to respond to any question posed to you, whether you have a lawyer present or not. It is your right to reserve the decision to speak or not to speak.
What about his reasoning? That the reason why he decided to do that is because OSP was using his subordinates, and that he doesn't see how the subordinates will investigate their boss, and that he will only talk to the board of the OSP itself.
Well, so he doesn't need to have a reason to talk or not to talk, but he doesn't at the same time, he doesn't have a right to determine who he speaks to. No one has a right to determine when being investigated that you'd like to talk to a particular person or the other. It is not a bargaining where you can determine whether you want to speak to a person because maybe you are more comfortable with that person, or maybe because you think you are the person you're talking to is not fit, I mean, by your own judgment, whether he has a right to question you or not. So long as the person is representing the institution investigating you, his rank does not matter. His position, intelligence.
Hello, Justice. Well, I may have lost him there on the Zoom call. Justice Abdullahi is a private legal practitioner walking us through what the law says about your right to plead the fifth, which is exactly what Martin Kwebu had done. According to the OSP himself, when he appeared before the committee, he says there is a committee of subordinates, and he doesn't see how they can investigate their boss. So live here on News 90s on Joy 99.7 FM. Still ahead, the impact of illegal mining has opened the door to ruthless exploitation in the central region, where a gallon of borehole water now goes as high as 5 Ghana cedis.
Yeah, okada wa na ye ji ba ko 5 cedis. But o your customer na open asam de otumi ye no miensa 10 cedis. Na je se wa consider no.
When it abo ya for no ye pese ye yiri ye ho na ye tum. Go yen so ye kuku aso.
More in our continuing series, Dear Mahama, hashtag Stop Galamsey, right after George. And George has a big news announced by the central bank today, signaling possibly an era of cheaper borrowing, if indeed the banks will follow suit.
Well, they do, even 18%, depending on where you're coming from and where you stand. Some would argue that that is still high. The banks would then have to look at this and what they call the Ghana reference rate and then set that rate. So it doesn't automatically mean that you're also going to see a reduction in the cost of lending by that margin of that 350 basis point. But Evans, definitely is going to impact on the cost of borrowing, Evans. In another story, favorable economic outlook and slowing inflation forces Bank of Ghana to cut the policy rate by some significant margin. Meanwhile, the Bank of Ghana is denying financing the operations of the gold board. A reduction in VAT to 20% and other tax reliefs to businesses set to take off from January 1. After Parliament today passed the revised tax bills. We'll get you more details on that one. The Business News on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome.
This advert is FDA approved.
You're welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, favorable economic outlook and inflation staying within the single-digit range forced the Bank of Ghana to cut the policy rate by some significant margin. The Monetary Policy Committee of the Central Bank cut the rate by 3% to 18%. Details in the following report.
Answering questions from journalists at the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of Ghana, the governor went ahead to justify their decision to cut the policy rate.
We are following the outlook for inflation. We believe that the 350 basis points is in line with our program and also consistent with the disinflation path. But that said, it's about assessing the risks on the upside to inflation.
He, however, rejected argument the policy rate could have gone down further than the 350 basis point cut.
We are following the outlook for inflation. We believe that the 350 basis points is in line with our program and also consistent with the disinflation path.
So what is the Bank of Ghana doing to ensure that we are not affected badly when it comes to any commodity price shocks versus the governor's assurance?
reserve accumulation, reserve buildup, right? FX intermediation, very little by way of, you know, even if we have to stem excessive volatility. That's the approach.
Dr. Esiam has also been giving us some updates over plans to hedge the price of Ghana's gold purchase and export.
Yes, we mentioned the hedging program some time ago as one of the ways to stem the vulnerabilities as we see them. However, the approach for now is to rebalance our portfolios, and that is what we are actively doing now.
The governor also says the central bank will not go with the strategy of one size fits all when it comes to recapitalization of commercial banks.
Well, nothing stops banks from lending to LBC, so long as it's within, you know, the regulatory thresholds, the single obligor limits and others. Banks are free to do so. Rest assured that banks are free to lend to LBCs in any way they want to lend, so long as it is within the SOL limits.
The governor of the Bank of Ghana assured that it stands ready to step in and cut policy rate by some significant margin.
And that is a business desk report. Meanwhile, the Bank of Ghana has denied funding the operations of the Ghana Gold Board. Dr. Johnson Esiama is governor of the Bank of Ghana.
So remember, Gold Board is just the PMMC as we used to have it. So it's our relationship to get, you know, vis-a-vis the Gold Board. It's just like the relationship we had with PMMC. What we do is to ask Gold Board to purchase something for us. And then that something is exported. When it's exported, we receive the US dollar. So it's not as though we are funding them. It is a service they are producing for us. And come to think of it, we take money from the commercial banks, right? From the commercial banks. And that is exactly what we pass on to the Gold Board, which they use to, you know, acquire the Dory gold. It is exported. We take custody of the FX, and then the same FX is intermediated.
Let's though stay on the monetary policy rate cut, because the Minister of Finance, Dr. Atuforsen, has described the Bank of Ghana's latest monetary policy rate cut as a major milestone in Ghana's economic recovery following the reduction in the rate. Now, he also says that he noted that the Bank of Ghana's monetary policy easing continues, referencing the sustained drop in inflation, which now stands at 8% as of October this year, a sharp drop from 27% that is in November last year. The Minister of Finance has explained that the new rate represents a some 350 basis point cut in the move that he believes will boost lending and ease credit pressure on businesses in the country. Now, businesses from next year will start paying 20% as the effective VAT rate. They will also not be paying the controversial COVID-19 levy. Now, this will be enjoying other tax reliefs as well. Now, this was after Parliament today passed the VAT Bill 2020. Let's hear from the Commissioner General, who says that they are poised to implement this from January 1.
We are hoping and expecting that we will get parliamentary approval before they rise for the Christmas season, ascend to 8. Expect that the implementation. But we will be working with the business community and start engaging to make sure that we plan well and give sufficient time to ensure that those who have to reset their systems are reset, and to ensure that they also get ready for the implementation. So we'll be coming back to you, but the overall plan is to try and get the act passed before the end of the year, and then we can plan for full implementation from January 26.
And that is the Commissioner General of the Ghana Revenue Authority, Anthony Kwesi-Sapon, explaining earlier at a program in Accra that they are poised to start implementing the revised taxes and the VAT bill that was passed by Parliament today. And that's all for business on Newsnight.
George, thank you very much. We're now waiting to see how this all pans out in terms of its impact on our pockets when we go to borrow. And we'll be talking pretty shortly with the Banking Association. And Kofi joins me with more on this very big day when it comes to the policy rate and its impact. And Kofi, you guys have been tracking a bit more of the historicals on this, because this falls within the bigger picture, does it not? Let's track back. How many rate cuts this year, and what is the magnitude as far as the BOG policy rate is concerned?
So in fact, this year we've seen three big rate cuts, and they've all been around 300 basis points. So for the first time, This governor inherited 27% monetary policy rate in January, maintained it that month, and in March hiked it by 100 basis points to 28%, and then maintained it in May to so that 28%. And in July, that was when we saw our first rate cut, 300 basis points from 28% to 25%, and another big one to, about 350 basis points to 21.5% in September. And we are seeing the same rate cut, 350 basis points to 18% in November. So since the beginning of the year, we can say that 1,000 basis points in rate cut. This is very significant.
Indeed, and we understand there still exists significant difference between the three important rates, inflation, policy rate, and lending rate. That's critical for everybody. Absolutely. I mean, that's why we all are excited about this, because of how eventually it affects your pocket.
So the expectation is that these three rates, you're supposed to see not that significant difference, right? But whilst you still have inflation being around 8%, the policy rate currently is around 18%, and you have the average lending rate, which is still above 20%. And so the big question is, will the commercial banks follow as the rate cuts comes to, the current monetary policy rate comes to 18%? Are we likely to see a big cut in terms of the average lending rate and even the Ghana reference rate, somewhere maybe next month?
Okay, and that's a big question. Big question indeed for banks, because it's only when the banks cut their rates that then George can go and get some loan at a cheaper rate. He can buy his next car that I know he's dreaming about. Guess what? I may have some answers for you. John Iwa is the CEO of the Ghana Association of Banks. Joins us right now on the line. Thanks for your time here on Newsnight. So you have a big rate cut today. When are we going to see this reflected in the interest rates at the banks?
Thank you very much. Latest by the first Wednesday of December, we'll be publishing the new Ghana reference rates, and you'll see the full force of the reduction in the policy rate that we've seen today, 350 basis points, reflected in the new Ghana reference rate to be published in the first Wednesday in December.
So that is a good timeline, and I know George is already writing that he's planning to come to you, one of your banks, and take a loan there. But here's the thing: how steep will the lending rate fall? Give us a sense.
I believe there will be a significant reduction from what we've seen in the past. Whenever the policy rate comes down that aggressively, we saw the 300 basis points, which resulted in the Ghana reference rate also coming down all the way to 17.86. With this significant reduction, I'm thinking that another 200 to 250 basis points reduction in the Ghana reference rate to be recorded.
Recall the last time I hosted you, you actually made the point that already the average lending rate is now around 19%, correct?
That is correct. You see, what the governor said, the governor talked about a reduction in the lending rate from 30% to, did he say 20 or 21? And from the data that we have picked, from new loans that are being assumptioned, yes, we are getting rates around 20%, 19%. And actually, a lot of the banks, given the wide disparity we had between the policy rate and the other market rates, We recorded a few of the banks or some of the banks lending below the policy rate as existed before this reduction.
So that's where we have it. So if the 19 was what you had as an average before this big rate, are we overstating it if we say we can expect it to the average, to drop to 15, or that would be too steep?
It's an interplay of three different rates. So the fact that one has gone down by 350 basis points does not mean that the Ghana reference rate will definitely go down by 350 basis points. It depends on the general movement over the period in the two other rates, which is the 21-day benchmark and the interbank rate. But ordinarily, once the policy rate moves, the interbank rate moves directly in tandem with the policy rate. So we believe that a significant weight will go on the other side of the reduction, which means we are likely going to record maybe somewhere around 300 basis points reduction in the policy rate, in the Ghana reference rate.
Okay, and thank you. So for the average Mokola woman who has been running away, the average farmer who has been running away from coming to the banks and is afraid because it's going to cost him too much to get credit, your assurance to him is that by the first Wednesday of December, they can expect, you know, the rate to go down.
Most definitely. And if you have been monitoring the media space, you've heard that a lot of the banks are advertising, asking customers to come. Banks are saying they have reduced their lending rates, asking customers to come. So the verdict is already out there. Banks have already gone to town making advertisements. Mm.
Thank you very, very much. And that's how this affects you, as you heard him there, take on the banks. And we're going to be monitoring to see if indeed it's reflecting in your pocket when you go to the banks to borrow. Let's do sports now.
It was Asante Kotoko after a late defeat to Basaka Holy Stars in their final outstanding Ghana Premier League game earlier today. Kotoko had a chance to move top of the league with a win, but they failed to do so. They now stand in fourth place of the Ghana Premier League table, just 3 points behind leaders Ediana Stars. Their head coach, Abdul Karim Zito, spoke after the game.
So we should have won this game. Seriously, we should have won this game. Once again, we squandered the chances. And you took your chances. So to me, we shouldn't have lost this game, but it's part of the game. So we all want to win the league. It's not only Kotoko. If the way you play here, the way you are playing every club, there wouldn't be last. So Kotoko, everybody wants to beat Kotoko. That is the magnetic of the issue. But we didn't play badly. We played good football, and we created chances. But putting the ball into the net was another, once again, the problem. But so far, so good. We are playing the league.
You heard Asante Kotoko head coach Abdul Karim Zito speaking there. The Champions League continues later tonight.
Delicious match.
Big one
in
is
prospect.
Arsenal against Bayern Munich at the Emirates Stadium. We have
it's first against second, right?
Yeah.
All of them on the same points.
Yeah. Best attack
goodness
against
me.
Best.
Goodness defense. Me. I'm looking forward to that. Thank you very much there. Now, the impact of illegal mining has opened the door to ruthless exploitation in the central region, where a gallon of borehole water now costs as high as 5 Ghana cedis. The water scarcity deepening after the pollution of the Yingsu and Prat rivers. Water has become a commodity controlled by private sellers. Okada riders now double as water couriers, charging desperate households for every gallon they can find. Emmanuel Jivenu has more in today's episode of Dear Mahama hashtag Stop Galamse.
Emmanuel Edri is an Okada rider in Kwinyako. He no longer carries passengers. The taps at Kwinyako have been dry since the Yensu River died under the weight of Galamse pollution. And a new business, water exploitation.
My customer called me for water, so I came to fetch from this borehole. We motorbike riders charge 5 cedis per gallon, but if the person is my regular customer, I may reduce it and take 10 cedis for 3 gallons.
The Ayensu River, which feeds the Kwinyako treatment plant, is now thick, brown, and unsafe. And in the absence of clean water, exploitation slipped in quietly. Families with nothing are forced to spend the little they have.
Illegal miners are polluting the Ayensu River upstream. This is the problem the activities are causing for us downstream.
In Yakrum, Jonas, a tricycle rider, has become a water courier.
If the customer brings their own gallons, I charge less. I only accept it when it's 10 to 15 gallons. That's the only way I can make money. We tricycle owners are even considering increasing our charges because this is our peak season.
Families struggle just to get water, often unsafe. Some walk miles for borehole. Others give up and return to the polluted river that caused the shutdown of the Kwinyako treatment plant. The science is simple. When the river dies, the treatment plant dies. When the treatment plant dies, the community becomes desperate. And in desperation, exploitation thrives.
It's alleged that government officials are involved in this illegal mining. We hear about it on the radio.
Even the chiefs, no one can mine on their land without their approval. We are pleading with the government to help stop the illegal mining.
Dear Mahama, water has become a luxury in the central region, and families are paying the price because they have no other choice. A crisis created by Galamsey has become a marketplace for survival, where a few profit while entire communities drown in water poverty. The people of Kwinyakun, Nyakrum, and Setrehiman are not asking for much, just the right to drink clean water without being exploited for it. Imano Jivanu, Joy News, Central Region.
Well, a horrifying tragedy unfolded at the Dansoman market as a fierce blaze tore through the area, reducing more than 80 shops to ashes and plunging the community into grief. Now, the inferno not only wiped out livelihoods, but also claimed the life of an 8-year-old girl. Now, speaking to Joy News, the Deputy Greater Accra NADMO Director, Nana Eduabua, confirmed that the police have taken custody of the charred remains as security services begin investigations into the cause of the fire. My colleague Collins has more in this report.
The Dawn fire ravaged the Dansoman markets, destroying dozens of stores and claiming the life of an 8-year-old child. The victim, Priscilla, is reported to have been left in her mother's shop when the fire started.
The child, actually, as I asked him, mom said he locked him for the shop inside. She went out to go and buy something. So before she came, there's a fire on here, so you can't enter the fire and go and save the kid. So it's about 8 years ago. It's a little girl. So this is a place where the burn. So actually here now, the place where the back. That's a place.
At daybreak, community leaders and firefighters were at the scene to assess the damage. Member of Parliament for Abelokuma West and other government officials met with the grieving family.
Very heartbreaking indeed, and our thoughts go to that particular woman and the rest of the family. The condolences.